Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, welcome to Teach Me to Talk with Laura and Kate. It's Friday, August 29th, and if you're listening right now, you're listening live at 1 o'clock p.m. Eastern Time. I'm Laura Mize, and I want to welcome you to our show. If you're joining us from the website, you already know about this, but if you're joining us from iTunes or from Blog Talk Radio, our website is teachmetotalk.com, and all the information that we're going to talk about on today's show can be found at our site as well. And again, this is Teach Me to Talk with Laura and Kate. So without further ado, let's see if Kate's there. Kate, are you there?
I'm here. It's ironic. It works better on my cell phone than my home phone. So, yes, I'm here, and I hope it's not too staticky.
So. It was better than your cordless. This is a better connection. Kate's usually out of town on Fridays. Today you're actually home, aren't you, Kate?
I'm actually home. First time in 3 weeks. Alone without my youngest child, who's in college having fun. So that's good.
Well, that would be a whole other show to talk about MTV.
Yeah, I don't want to do that. I don't feel like I've mastered that yet. I need some more practice. No.
And I'm going to have another, probably 6, 7, 8 years before that's even an issue for me. So there you go.
Yep.
All right. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, you go ahead.
Well, I was just going to give our toll-free number so that we can have some live callers today. That number is 1-718-766-4332. Again, that's 1-718-766-4332. If you missed that number, it's on the website at teachmetotalk.com. You can also listen from the website, too, if you're having technical difficulties at Blog Talk Radio. And they may be having some difficulties today. We had a little bit of trouble signing on, which has been unlike we haven't had any difficulty in the – is this our fourth show or fifth show? I can't remember. But
fourth, maybe? I think fourth.
Yeah, and we haven't had trouble signing on before, but today we did. So there may be some technical difficulties if we're cut off. Oh, well, we'll just do the best we can.
Okay, but if you're listening and trying calling, because we love callers, it's really fun to get them. We've had a nice variety already, so
yeah.
Call in.
We'd love to hear from you.
Yeah.
You can ask any question about child language, not just necessarily about what we're talking about today. So, again, we'd love to hear from you. All right, but the scheduled topic for the show today is to finish up those six strategies that we were talking about that parents can use at home to help their children learn how to communicate. And we've already talked about playfulness. We've talked about – oh, is that your phone?
That's the home phone. Just ignore it, please.
Okay, we've talked about playfulness. We've talked about sign language. We've talked about choices. We've talked about modeling. Last week we had a great discussion about withholding, and today we're finishing up our last strategy, which is expansion. And expansion is the technique that you use. Oh, I'm sorry, I'm really stuttering today. Expansion is what you use when your child is ready to go from single words, that would be one word at a time, to expand to phrases. And children are typically ready to do that when they can imitate well, and when they have a base vocabulary of 35 to 50 different words, and also when they're able to sequence syllables in a row. So if you have a kid that's only really doing ma for mama and da for dada, or just any kind of single syllable when it really is a word that's more than one syllable, he's probably not ready to go to phrases. We're going to talk about some things today that can help get him ready, but again, that's a pretty prerequisite requirement, is that they be able to sequence at least two of vowel sounds before they're ready to move on. Does that make sense to you, Kate?
Yeah, it does to me. Of course, I'm kind of pretty familiar with the concept, but yeah, I think to the general average listener, you know, if they're saying, what would be a good example?
If you have a word like banana and they're just saying nah for banana and not even the standard kind of nana, that might be an indication that they're going to have some difficulty bumping up to phrases because they, for whatever reason, can't sequence at least two vowel sounds in a row. If you've got a kid that's doing ah for banana, that's still better than a kid that would just say nah. You'll only be able to get that one-syllable utterance at a time. And I see kids like that, and they're especially children who've been diagnosed with or will be diagnosed with motor planning problems, and that's also known as apraxia. But that's a real issue for those kids because sometimes they can't get even two vowels in a row. So for uh-oh, they might just say or just might say oh. For a bye-bye, you know, it's okay for them just to say bye. You may not even realize that there's a real sequencing problem there. But, again, that's an absolute requirement before kids can move on to phrases is that they're able to sequence two syllables in a row.
Yeah, you mentioned that bye-bye example, Laura. I'm sure you have because I've had quite a few myself. Kids who parents, I think it's kind of natural. Parents always model bye-bye, bye-bye. I mean, that's just what we tell our babies to say, you know, as we're waving and helping them wave. But those kids who, you know, may get a diagnosis of apraxia at some point, frequently if you'll model bye, they can get that out. And I've had to remind a lot of parents of that. And then when they do it, they get it. And it's, it's because they can't get those two syllables together. So.
Right. Mm-hmm. Or you'll hear a kid that really, you know, we all do mama and dada, and they really do start to call their mom ma pretty early.
Mm-hmm.
And, again, the reason is that they can't sequence. Some parents think it's so cute, and I think it's cute, too. I don't care what kids call their moms. But they'll say, gosh, he's already gone to mom. He kind of skipped the whole mama.
Uh-huh.
Oh, that's because he can't get two syllables together yet. That might not necessarily be a great indicator.
Uh-huh.
As far as bumping up the ladder language-wise or even intelligibility-wise, because that does tell me that they have some difficulty brewing there that we may not even know about yet.
And then it also brings to mind those kids that when we initially start with them, everything they say is one consonant vowel combination, da, and then you're saying ball, ball, da, and then you're saying, no matter, go, go, da. That's all they can get out. That's it. That's their one. And they frequently know the word. They know they're trying to say ball or whatever, but it comes out, da. The mom says, that's all he says. And we think, oh, boy, here we go.
I have had a couple kids that are still in my caseload now, and these three kids that I'm thinking about are all doing great, but they all started out with me with hardly any consonants at all.
Mm-hmm.
So bye-bye was I. Mama was, they might have, two of them really did have maybe an M and maybe a D, but that's it as far as consonants. So many of their words, you know, bye-bye was die-die. you know,
we've had a lot of those. Die-die. Oh.
Really, really limited in the amount of consonant sounds that were in their repertoire. And so many kids with apraxia and kids who are, we still don't know that they're apraxic because they're not saying enough yet for us to judge it or, you know, demonstrating other signs that we would readily notice. But they're not, they're not even really using more than a couple of vowel sounds. And even when they're doing words with different vowels, you know, they still stick with their standard or ah, or something that's, you know, again, really pretty easy for them to do. So that's a red flag. Let me give you the number again, the call-in number. It's 718-766-4332. And, again, we'd love to hear from you. And today we're talking about expansion and how we can help your children move from words to phrases. One other way that I use expansion is also before a kid, and it's, again, for a kid that we've just been talking about, for kids who have that motor planning or difficulty sequencing, expansion is sometimes a good in-between step so that you could take a single word like, and we've talked about this on the show before, up, 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 or down, 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 and really get them to produce that in a sequence before they're even really ready to combine two different words into two-word phrases.
Yeah, I always kind of explain that as kind of getting their brains practicing on doing more than one thing. And if you start with something they've been doing for a long time, up, 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 or ball, 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 or
more, more,
mind,
more.
Mind, mind, more, yeah. more, more, mind, 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 whatever their target word that they got early on and they use it and they like it and they can do it, if you'll model that playfully repeated with that sing-song voice, they might be able to sequence that. And it's like, well, you know, it's a starting point for getting them to do two-syllable words or combine short words. So.
Right.
Okay.
Okay. The other thing that we need to really look at when we're deciding when children are ready to move on is that they need to have a variety of words in their vocabularies from different categories. You know, it's really hard to make a phrase with ball, shoe. And most kids have a larger percentage of nouns in their early vocabularies, and that is completely normal. But you've got to have some additional words in there. So I wanted to talk about these additional word categories that kids would need when they're getting ready to expand to phrases. One of those we've already kind of talked about, social words like bye-bye and hi, because then you can pair that with bye-bye mama, hi dada, and make some nice early phrases there. Those requesting words that we're so fond of using, more, please, you can put that with another noun pretty easily and make a good early phrase. And then verbs or action words. And again, we've talked about some of those. My favorite ones to start with are usually eat, because I can usually get a kid to do that verb because it's pretty easy. If they can do an E.
Yeah.
Sometimes that's a harder vowel for kids with motor planning problems. But eat is a good one. Night-night, even though not technically a real verb, probably in an English class, but it's my favorite verb. With language delayed kids, and they usually get that. And even if they're going I for night night,
right,
that's a pretty good one to start with too.
And then like that long E, the I seems pretty easy. That's a pretty, don't you? I mean, see that, Laura? I don't know. Well, that kids, even those kids, and I seem to have a group of them right now that don't have a long E sound, but the I, long I, maybe because somebody's been saying, "Where's your I?" For 18 or, you know, 24 months, where's your I? They can get I out, you know.
You know, I is really kind of an open vowel. I, you know, think about it, your jaw drops. It's kind of open and it's close to which is kind of
their favorite.
Yeah, that, and really is more of a, it requires a more complex mouth movement to get E.
Okay, well.
That, I think that's the reason that that's easier. And we could get really technical and talk about, you know, the back vowels and the mid vowels and all that. And I don't really want to go into all that, but I think that's why you're getting a better nigh-nigh, because it's closer, that vowel's closer to kind of a neutral vowel, which is So it would be easier to do.
See, there's the technical part of it. All I know is that kids can say I long before they are an I sound anyway, not necessarily the I word, but, you know, make that sound long before the long E. And she's just told us why. That's why she's the speech therapist and I'm the DI. I just say, I don't know why. I just know it is.
It just
so
works.
There's the reason. Yeah. So where were we on the expansion thing, Laura?
Okay, so we're talking about all the different kinds of words that kids need when you're working
right.
on expanding their vocabularies. We talked about that they need, and usually with typically developing language, kids have tons and tons of nouns or names of things, because that's what we usually teach first. But when we're looking at vocabularies, we also need some additional words to combine with those nouns to make some good phrases. We've talked about social words, those little requesting words, please, more. We've talked about verbs. Another kind of easy phrase pattern to get, I think, is to combine that very important pronoun, mine or my, with something else, like my shoes, my cookie, my ball.
Because after all, we are basically largely dealing with two-year-olds, and there's no better word in the English dictionary than mine or my. So if you put that out there for them, they usually, isn't that right?
Yes, totally. And that's how they get it. And, you know, really cognitively, that's when why pronouns start to come in at that point, is because right around that time, between 18 months and 24 months, children really are learning, I'm a separate person from my mom and dad. I have different things going on. I can get my needs met. And, again, that's that whole psychology thing, you could probably talk about that better than I could with your background in psychology. But that's why that emerges when it does language-wise, because that's what they're working on psychologically or cognitively as well.
Right, which is why you see so many power struggles between children that age, 18 months to 2 years old, where they're grabbing and screaming and pulling it away from, because they kind of think everything is theirs, everything they like anyway. So
yeah.
I see so many skirmishes between young children and, you know, even if it's not theirs, but they have played with it and they see somebody with it, they're likely to grab hold and hold on for dear life and pull it away. And if they have the words, they'll be saying, my car, my ball, my shoe. Yeah, so.
And when I see a kid really acting like that, moms get so upset about it sometimes and think, oh, I don't really want to work on that word with them. That makes them sound like a brat. But I think that's where he is cognitively, and this is his little phase that he has to work through. So let's use that intent and teach the word that goes along with that. And the sign for mine is really easy. It's just patting your chest. It's pretty darn obvious. And again, a lot of kids can get that M out in that kind of context because it's also an emotionally charged word for so many kids when they're in those situations. So I think that's a great time to work on those.
That heightened arousal level that helps them get those words out when they really need them. Yeah. But Laura, of course, in therapy always does it very playfully, but they get it. You know, they understand, oh, that's, they're happy to tell you whatever they like is there. So the other one, Laura, you didn't mention on the verb thing. I always put go in there, which I don't know. I'd like to stick that in there because that one, everything they like, particularly little boys, which we see a lot of, everything they like tends to go, whether it's a ball or a car or a truck or, you know, swing or everything goes. So I always work on go very early. And the sign is, well, I cue it with two fingers, ready, set, but then I twirl my hands. And, you know, I have this little boy, Laura. You've heard me talk about him before, but he's done a go where he's, like, punching his little hands.
Oh,
it's the cutest little thing. He just lights up, and I thought, that's better, because the traditional go, or what I learned is the sign for go was you take your fingers and roll them in front of you, but kids who have motor planning problems, they can't roll their hands. That's really hard for them to figure out. But that little punch your hands back and forth, it's adorable. So I've been doing it that way lately.
Oh, I think that's good. I may switch to that. You know, I think the rolling your hands in front of you is not the American Sign Language version of go. That version is you take both of your index fingers and point them kind of diagonally from your body. And you twice. That's real go.
That would be really hard.
Yeah, I can hardly
never get their fingers out, let alone, yeah, no.
Well, and I think parents can misread that because they think that they're pointing to something. And
mm-hmm.
So I really have switched, unless a parent was already signing it before I got there and have already taught it and already know it that way, I have switched to the, and I don't ever roll my fingers in front of my body.
I just do my fists.
Yeah. Yeah,
well, this guy does his little hands like he's boxing, and it's just the cutest little thing.
That's cute.
I just think, I think they could get that easier.
I think they probably could, too, because the rolling thing sometimes is hard for kids. But then, in a way, I want them to really practice motor actions that are a little bit more difficult for them because sometimes kids aren't only verbally apraxic, they're globally apraxic, meaning that they have some coordination problems all over their bodies. These might be kids who fall a lot. These might be kids who have to work really hard to get the Legos together, or kids that even kind of give up on a toy or do the same repetitive action over and over and over because they can't always make their little bodies plan what they should do next with a toy. So I do kind of like to challenge some of those systems sometimes and do a harder sign than I might think that they can do just to work on that overall body awareness, motor coordination piece.
Right. I guess I'm just talking about early on getting any approximation, because sometimes, just like with language, if you set the standard on the sign too high, then you get nothing, you know. So talking about early when we're accepting pretty gross approximations of what we'd like, and I think we're on the same page that we don't ever get too stuck on it has to be the perfect sign. It just, as long as it's kind of universally understood, it works.
Yeah.
So we're teaching them to talk. Ideally not signs, so
right.
Stop, gap, measure. Anyway, we're not on signs this week. We're on I took you back to verbs, and then you were talking about...
We were talking about...
Oh, the my and mine, or sticking that on,
pronouns, yeah. Early pronouns. Lots of kids, well, let me just back up for a second and say that besides mine and me and my, those little versions of that pronoun, you might not see other pronouns come in until closer to 2.5 with a typically developing child, or maybe a little sooner than that with I. You know, I want more. I want that. Or even you. And sometimes kids will pop out.
Are you segueing into your next topic?
No. I'm still talking about pronouns.
Oh, I thought you were going to talk about those carrier phrases. I call them frozen phrases. Like, oh, good segue, Laura. Hey, you haven't said to call in lately. Can I say it?
Yeah, go ahead.
I wanted to give our call-in number. Hmm?
Do you know the number?
I wrote it down.
I'm so impressed.
I'm going to say it because I want a caller, and we're already halfway through the show almost. Oh, close. So we got to get a caller, so I'm going to do it. If you have any questions or you just want to share an idea or you have anything to do with early intervention and working with young children with delays, that's what we're talking about, specifically language, but we'll take all callers. And the toll-free number is 1-718-766-4332. So if you have any questions or things you'd like to share, please call. We love callers. Okay.
Did that so well. That can be your permanent job now.
I just wanted to do it once. I didn't like it that much. you don't give up your job on that. You're good. I just wanted to get in because
I'm going to talk that to you. That was great.
Time's a wasting. We need a caller. Maybe we should have your mom call in. I bet she's listening.
She's listening. I know she is. I'm not talking to her today, but she doesn't miss our show live.
Isn't that sweet? Okay, so where were we?
Okay, we were talking about pronouns, and I was saying you can try some of those other pronouns, I want or I do, I go, I, but again, that pronoun isn't the earliest one that you would really want to work on because it doesn't come in that quickly with children with typically developing language. So again, with our little kiddos with language delays, you really don't want to work on anything specifically until it would already have started to emerge in children without language problems. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. The next word class that we want to talk about, and again, remember we're talking about making sure that children have enough words in their vocabularies to be able to make phrases, are prepositions. And if you'll think back to English, that means location words. And the early ones are in, out, off, on, up, down. And then I count here and there because I think those kinds of location words, so many kids, you'll ask them, you know, where's the dog? And they may not even realize their answer before they blurt out, right here. You know, that's just kind of a standard location word that lots of kids can get. But again, those prepositions that you want to be working on when you're building that early vocabulary, in, out, off, on, up, down, here, and there. The more difficult ones like under and beside and by, those typically don't emerge in children until closer to 3. So if we stick with the list that we've already talked about, those are concepts that children should have already mastered. I think in, out, off, and on, those are pretty early. Do you have those on your developmental test, like 12 to 15 months, Kate? Do you remember?
I'm not. Well, I think it would fall under something like directional terms, and I'm trying to think of the age.
It's pretty early.
Yeah, I think they are.
Yeah, and how many times do we say, put it in, there, or off, she's on. So those are the big ones, and then as well as up and down, and I think we use up and down with kids all the time as moms and dads.
Right. Well, and those early ones you just mentioned, in, on, off, they're great because they don't start with a consonant sound, and so many kids have problems getting that, you know, starting a word with a B or a D or a P, even the early consonant sound. So if you give them that vowel thing, they can sometimes, not every, you know, language-related child, but oftentimes they can come closer on those vowels. And if you're exaggerating, on, you know, in, you're putting that final consonant on, but really you're exaggerating the vowel, and that's easier oftentimes for kids who can't hardly control anything that comes out of their mouths to imitate that. So they like those.
They do.
Also gives them kind of control. They can tell you, you know, right. Ah, Ian!
Yeah.
So they like those words. Uh-huh.
And I do
yep.
a lot of pretending like I don't know what kids are telling me when they're doing that, so that I have them really try to work to get that vowel a little closer, or that they're, you know, that if they're trying to say, tell me to put something down, I almost instinctively hold it up and say, what? Where do you want
yeah.
to put it? So it they have to try a little harder and, you know, again, get that extra practice with telling me.
Mm-hmm.
So that's something I do with those prepositions all the time. Okay, the next kind of word class are your adjectives or adverbs, the descriptive words. And the big ones for two-year-olds, again, looking at kind of where they are cognitively, would be words that tell you about size, like big and little, although I wish there was an easier way to say little because it's a pretty hard word.
I know, really hard.
And sometimes I try
I've had some – go ahead.
Oh, go ahead. You go ahead.
No, you – go ahead, Barb.
Well, sometimes I try to I've tried to do small, but that's another hard word because you've got an S blend right there.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, those two consonants together, and so that's kind of hard. I've tried tiny.
I was going to say tiny, but, yeah, that's not necessarily great. How about itty? We should say itty. Itty bitty. I bet they could get ee out.
You know, I usually always ask parents, what do you say? What word? Because really I want to keep it pretty close to
mm-hmm.
understanding. And, you know, really we do big and little. You know, it's
yeah.
little, it's little. But that's a really hard word for a lot of language like kids to say because of the L's right there. And L really is a later developing consonant sound. In a minute, we're going to talk about when different consonants come in and when it's okay to have a consonant substitution for a 1 or a 2-year-old, but we'll get to that in a minute. Let's finish up this vocabulary section first. But the descriptive words, again, I try to think opposites on that, hot, cold, wet, dry, those kinds of early, really familiar descriptive words are the ones that I use first with children. And then I do some that are kind of silly, too, like yucky and yummy. I think kids can get those and put that with another word pretty quickly.
Mm-hmm.
That's all you have to say about that?
Well,
Which ones do you use? Tell me some modifiers or descriptive words that you use. And you can just tell me this, but I want to let our listeners know that there are lists of, like, the earliest, I can't remember what I call that name of that article. I wrote it a long time ago. But the first 100 words or whatever, there's some really good word lists that if you're at a loss for what words to use or which ones would be easiest to teach, that's all on the website. I think it is actually in the sign language section, like the first 100 words or early vocabulary or something like that. You'll be able to find it when you look for that.
I'm trying to think, Laura. I always do hot and cold very early. Those are fun things to exaggerate, and kids seem to, you know,
they get those
pretty early. I always do some big and little, although, like you, little's a problem. I probably do more big. Generally, they want the big one, not the little one.
You know, a lot of kids I see call things baby so much that I
uh-huh.
do that, too. You know, that one's big and that one's the baby.
Yeah.
It's easier for lots of kids to say, too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's true. I do that a lot, too, the baby one, even if it's a chair or, a, you know,
yeah.
doesn't have to be... Whatever it is, if it's little, it's the baby. I do the yummy and yucky, probably more yucky. Those are the ones I use. And a lot of times what dictates what you do is what works into your, you know, your therapy session and what they might be able to imitate. Cause,
right.
Yeah. Early ones, those are probably my standards. And I use the other ones more as much for using them for what I say to see if they understand it, not necessarily hoping that they might use those words yet themselves, you know.
And that's an important thing, is they really do need to be understanding it before they start to say it, or at least in conjunction with it, because otherwise it's not very meaningful if you're just doing repetition without really linking it to an object or an action.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. The next thing we've already sort of hit on a little earlier when we're looking at making the leap from words to phrases or helping kids move so that they are using two- and three-word phrases is the sequencing piece, being able to sequence two syllables together. And then tied with that, you want to be sure that your child is able to use several different types of syllable structures or syllable shapes. And that, that again, is pretty technical, and I know you don't really care too much about this, Kate, but I'm going to talk about it anyway.
Well, I can learn something. Go ahead. Just don't ask me to respond to it.
Okay.
I'm going to listen.
Your uh-huh will be perfectly fine.
Okay.
Typically, toddlers, when language and speech are moving along really, really well, and I don't think we've talked about the difference when how I'm using the term speech and language. Speech really refers to the sounds that you're making, how understandable or intelligible you are. That's the speech part. Language is really referring to the vocabulary, to the length of the phrases or sentences that you're using, the early grammar of when kids start doing plurals and when kids start doing marking verb endings like running or jumped with that ending ed on there. Those things are all in a toddler's language skills, and then speech would be the actual sound production part. I don't know if we've ever even talked about that, but I wanted to clarify that. So this information really refers to his or her speech production skills, and again, a child who is moving along, who is getting to the point that they are ready to start to work on phrases, should be able to have some variability in the kinds of syllables that they use. And we've already talked about the kids that can't always do great consonant sounds at the beginning, so that they're just limited. They may have one or two sounds with that. But you want to be sure that your kids can start a word with a consonant, that they can start a word with a vowel, and then later as they're moving toward two and a half and three, that they're doing words that have ending consonant sounds on there. Words that start with a vowel but that are more than one syllable, like open, you know, that's hard for a lot of kids because you've got the vowel consonant there and then another vowel consonant, but they're made at different places in your mouth, so that's kind of hard for them to do. Apple would be another example of a word like that, where it starts with a vowel, but it has some, most kids, when they're learning to say apple, do appa, so, you know, it's a vowel, consonant, vowel. So you want to sort of analyze how your child's words look from a syllable structure perspective to make sure that you're helping them learn to sequence different sounds and make different syllable structures. And that's all I'm going to say about that. Again, that specific information is on the website at teachmetotalk.com. It's in the article, Making the Leap from Words to Phrases, and you can look that there. And then we'll move on because that's very speechy. Make sure you say, uh-huh.
Uh-huh. And you're a little more languagey because you tend to deal with younger children and you're about, you know, working on their language. And we always joke that the school speech therapist can clean up that speech later on. But
right, and fix those speech things and those articulation things. But it is something I think about if we're kind of stuck at a place where I think, why aren't we moving on here? I might really write a kid's words down and really think about, okay, that's a vowel consonant word, or we have no words that start with vowels. Gosh, that might be an issue. Maybe we should work on that a little bit. And again, I do think language is the most important thing to work on for kids when they're toddlers, and again, still in the 1 and 2 year old phase, and even some 3 year olds, if they have not started to really talk with a big variety and, you know, combine lots of words into phrases, you still need to look at them and use these same guidelines with them, because until a child's language skills are caught up, you really shouldn't be focusing too much on the speech part, which I think the point was that you were making.
What was that?
I think that's the point you were making, is that I don't
right.
want to focus on these speech things, but it is a consideration when you're helping your child move from words to phrases. If he doesn't have a whole lot of ability with his syllable structures, it's probably going to be really, really hard to understand him.
Right. Right. Well, and I think you have something about, I'm sure you do, an article about on your website about therapists who kind of come right in with a child who has, you know, few or no sounds, maybe a couple sounds or consonant sounds, and they start kind of targeting just making the sounds, and they're really not working on words, and, you know, they're just, and two-year-olds, one-year-olds, two-year-olds, even plenty of three-year-olds, they're not really terribly interested in just sitting there making sounds. And so it kind of, that's what she's saying about the language. Yeah, you know, it's hard to make, say, dad, 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 or da, over and over and over and over and over and over and over, and all you're working on is da, and you're not talking about the dad, or, you know, you're not making it fun. It's not playful. It's just practicing sounds. It doesn't, you know, those sessions don't tend to last too long because most kids, in their way, special way of communicating, let you know they're probably not going to sit there and do that for much longer. So.
Right. They either totally shut down
mm-hmm.
and kind of isolate themselves and really leave you out of their play, or they leave the room, the runners, who in no uncertain terms let you know you need to move on to something that is more fun. You know, and I never, even though I'm talking about this more technical stuff, that never is the focus of my treatment with a kid with delayed language. You know, sounds are a part of it, and it's something that I think about, but again, it's not the main focus for therapy. It's helping kids communicate, and even word approximations, I don't care if they can't do one single consonant vowel together. If they're communicating and really attempting that and their parents understand them, that's much more important to me than a kid who's able to make lots of consonant sounds in isolation and not use that those functionally with words.
Right. Okay.
All right. I can't believe we haven't had a caller.
I know. They're missing their opportunity.
I know. Maybe they're all watching that. Oh, Johnny said we did have one and they hung up. Maybe they'll call back. Call back, caller. We want to hear from you. You give the number again, Kate.
Oh, boy. I'm not in front of my number.
I'll do it. Okay. It's 718-766-4332. Again, that's a toll-free number. We'd love to hear from you today. Okay, back to something that's less technical with moving from words to phrases. Children need to hear a variety of two-word phrases modeled for them before they're able to imitate them. And so that means if you have a kid that's ready to really make that bump up, he's got to hear you say lots of different two-word things. And even though he can understand when you talk to him in long, long sentences, he's probably not going to be able to isolate those phrases unless he and be able to say those phrases unless he hears you model those a lot. And so you also want to be sure that you're looking at taking words from his core vocabulary that he already has, put those in phrases, so that you're doing something that you know that he can already do.
Right. Even in the phrases, though, that they would have each of those words individually, and then you. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay, we have a caller.
Yay! I bet they called back.
I think they called back. Okay.
Take it, Laura. Take it.
Hi, caller.
Hi, Laura. This is Annette. No, I didn't call back.
Oh, you're saving us today, Annette.
You're saving us. We need a caller. Hi, Annette.
I wasn't sure if you were on the phone or not. I've been in and out. I'm trying to get my kids busy so they leave me alone for 5 minutes.
Yeah.
I have a couple of questions. I'm not really sure where you're at. I know you were going to talk
okay.
about expansion today.
Uh-huh.
And I know if I'm so out of breath. What if kids don't have enough language to expand on? Are you bombarding them too much, confusing them, making them want to shy away from you, or?
No, if you don't have a kid who on his own is saying 35 to 50 words consistently,
mm-hmm.
I don't even work on two-word phrases until
uh-huh.
they have that really solid vocabulary base there.
Other than what would come naturally.
What do you mean by that?
Well, okay, my little guy, he's got a handful of words. I mean, I can't count anymore. He's just labeling everything, and repeating and just really expanding his, you know, vocabulary every day.
Right. So he has more than 50 words.
I think so. I'm pretty sure. I think he's closer to the 100 word category.
Oh, good.
Like I said, it's really hard to keep track.
Yeah.
But he doesn't. Sometimes he will mimic me if I expand on what he's, you know, saying. But like this morning, he was messing around with a dog, and the dog stepped on his foot, and he goes, "Ow!" You know, and "Doggy."
Uh-huh.
And I said, "Oh, doggy did it," and he goes, "Yeah." So I try and expand on what he says to complete his, you know, his thought, you know what I mean? To give him that phrase that he needs to do and needs to say, doggy did it or doggy boo-boo or whatever. And so, you know, occasionally I get a little opportunity like that, but I just wondered if you don't have enough, you know, regular words.
Right. That's what we were talking about. I bet you were trying to get your kids occupied while we were talking about this. But
yeah.
Looking at different word classes, and
mm-hmm.
you'll think back to English when you had to diagram all those sentences. You know, we have verbs, which are action words, prepositions,
mm-hmm.
which are location words. You've got to have a pretty big word base to be able to use those.
Right.
Because it really, kids rarely use a word in a phrase until they've mastered it, kind of using it alone.
Uh-huh. And he says quite a few common phrases, like, I got it, I did it, you know,
that's
things like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's doing a lot of that, so that's good. And right now my mind is just drawing a blank, but yesterday when...
Well, he's already doing, I did it, that would have been a good thing for you to really prompt. Doggy did it. And that's what I would have done in that situation is say it over and over and over and then try to get him to really imitate you doing that.
Okay. And so that comes up my next question when you say over and over and over. I'm not normally a very chatty person. I crave quiet.
Uh-huh.
And I was just wondering if his personality is anywhere near mine. Am I bombarding him with too much talk and he just wants to shut down and ignore me? Because sometimes I'll do that if somebody is droning me with information or gossip or whatever.
Yeah.
My ears just automatically turn off and I don't hear you anymore. And I just wonder if what would happen if he's like that? What do I do?
Well, here's the thing. You're choosing to really do that. But you can make that decision and kind of turn that off because you're an adult and you already know what those words mean. But we really can't let language delayed children, quote unquote, choose not to hear us because honestly their choice may be to never.
Well, you know, we all get that selective hearing at some point, and I just wondered how young do kids get it because my almost 5-year-old kind of does it now. You know, where she's refusing to listen to me at some point. You know, she doesn't hear me anymore.
Right.
And I have to get her attention a different way. But I just wonder with the language delay, how much am I, you know, can I turn him off to language by bombarding him too much?
I think he probably has that natural inclination to kind of be turned off to language anyway.
Uh-huh.
Just with the fact that he has a delay.
Uh-huh.
So that tells you right there that his natural inclination probably is going to be to kind of shut that stuff out.
Uh-huh.
So I think
I haven't run into too much of that yet, but I just wondered if I'm getting to a point, because I do constantly, you know, talk at him. And it's like...
I think you should really keep on doing that. I'm not going to tell you to pull back with that, because I think that's a wrong approach with kids who are kind of isolated. But again, if it looks like you're annoying him, you're going to pull back a little bit. And I've been in homes where the mom is almost frantic with how she's talking. And sometimes I think, oh, she's just nervous because I'm here and she doesn't know me yet and she doesn't know how this is going to go. But, you know, she's saying, Mom, get the ball. Oh, no, let's get the book. Where's your dog? Da-da-da. You know, and she's so overbearing that by the time I'm done, I think, lady. Chill.
Right. I think that would scare a child, especially one that is trying to pick up on language. And then here you are screaming and squealing and where's the fire? You know, they're probably going in a panic mode themselves.
Well,
boy, I sure would.
Well, it depends on their arousal level. Some kids really need that extra hoopla to even tune in. And then some kids whose pendulums have swung so far the other way, it might be too much and they just shut down. So you're really going to
uh-huh.
have, you know, and that really is kind of a sensory processing issue.
Uh-huh.
It's into a language thing. And we're going to have one of our colleagues on in a few weeks, hopefully sometime in October, to really talk about sensory processing and how that affects children learning language.
Uh-huh.
But it's kind of, I know what you're saying, and I would never tell you to, again, be so in his face that it makes him want to shut down, but you've got to walk that fine line because, again, mm-hmm. I think kids who are having difficulty learning language really need to hear it and really,
okay.
You know, really you need to be pretty persistent about that. And what I would have done today with the dog is if he does did it, you know, when I did it, he probably has learned that as a whole phrase, and we call those holistic phrases. I did it. I got it. Here it is. There it goes.
Right.
Kids
right.
chunk that and all that information together. It doesn't really mean, you know, I understand that that means me, and did is my verb there, and it is my pronoun there.
Right.
I'm thinking about that. They're just thinking it means I am the person who performed this action, and this was really great. But
uh-huh.
you can take those chunks of those little phrases and match that with a noun that he has, like doggy did it. And
uh-huh.
when I say it over and over, I'm meaning as long as he's paying attention. When he's
well, actually, this morning with that got it thing, he had dropped oatmeal on his shirt. And I said, uh-oh, you spilled it on your shirt. And, you know, we're working with clothing articles, names, and all that. And he does really good with it. Sometimes he gets his shirt and his pants confused. But I went to wipe it off, and it sounded like he said, you got it.
Oh.
But he just said, got it. And I think he knew, you got it. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
But he did say, got it. So I think he's at this point where he's sneaking up on me with what he knows
yeah.
as far as the you and the I and her and the him.
Right.
I think he's sneaking up on that because I know this little guy has so much in his head, and it's just up to me to kind of get it out in the right order.
Right.
And I don't want, you know, I don't have a problem with bombarding him, but I was wondering if that is something I should be aware of since I'm that way. And that leads me into my next question.
Uh-huh.
Why do I feel guilty if I'm not working with him every minute of the day?
Because
there are times...
We
well, I hate feeling so guilty sometimes because I just need a few minutes, you know.
Right.
But he'll be playing with his trains or whatever, and it's an opportunity for me to sit down and start playing and talking. But I've got laundry piling up and the dog's jumping on it and dishes, and I'm like, I really want him to keep a certain amount of his independent play because I don't want him to become attached to my hip,
right.
you know, where he feels he can't do anything without me. So... It, how do you get that balance, you know? I mean, is it just something you do instinctually? You take what you can when you need to and don't, you know, just make sure you don't overdo it?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Because
yeah.
I do want him to maintain that ability to play by himself, but I don't want to miss out on an opportunity either.
Right.
And I don't want to feel bad about it.
Let me give my two cents on that one, Annette, okay?
Okay.
And this is just my opinion, so, you know, do with it what you want. I would say if I were, my kids are older, my youngest just left for college, but if I had a child who was language delayed and I was very concerned about him or her, my bottom line would be this. Commit in your mind to a certain amount of time every day, whether it be a 20-minute period in the morning and a 20-minute period in the evening, maybe 20 minutes at night with dad. It doesn't have to be just you, but whoever, grandma, you know. And then beyond that, any time that you're able to take advantage of that perfect moment, then great, and you can. But if you have to do the dishes or the laundry, life has to go on. You know, you do have to do some other things so that you can always feel like I did at least, you know, what I require of myself every day to know I'm really committed and doing what I need to do. But then if there's extra time, great. You know, well, Laura, what do you think about that?
I think that's so true. And, you know, I do want to go back to children. You know, we don't have guidelines per se for children with language delays with how much interaction they need. But we do have some pretty specific guidelines for children who've been diagnosed with autism.
Mm-hmm.
The statistics tell us that they need 25 hours a week of
uh-huh.
interaction with adults. And that doesn't mean... in the same room with adults, that means interaction. Preschool time counts in that. therapy time counts in that. Time playing with mom and dad, you know, 10 minutes on the swing and then, you know, an hour later, 20 minutes with the blocks or whatever. But they need 25 hours. And lots
wow.
of families would hit that automatically because they're so involved with their kids. But I have a lot of families who don't, who think, you know, that's going to be a real stretch for them to interact with their kids that much. So that would
well, especially if they have a 40-hour job, you know.
Yeah.
That would be a lot.
That's a problem, isn't it?
Yeah.
Good problem. But it sounds like you're doing a lot.
Yeah.
I'm fortunate in that department that I am able to stay home with him. And that makes me wonder, too. I don't want to treat him really any different because, I mean, I have four kids. And
right.
the older two, I mean, they understand. They're doing their own thing pretty much. But I don't really want to treat him so different that he feels he's going to get special treatment for this. You know what I mean? So, I mean, if he needs discipline, he needs it a little bit different. But
right.
how do you, you know...
Well, that's what I was going to say. Fair doesn't mean equal for all of our children. What's fair
uh-huh.
for him is not going to necessarily be what's equal for time that you spend with, you know, one of your other children. Or
uh-huh.
he's at a different age, and this is his prime time language learning opportunity. You know, this is when he needs it. And so you have to kind of realize, okay, I'm going to have to shift more of this time to him at this point because we're missing... You know, he's missing these critical developmental skills that he needs. And, you know, I think people think, oh, she's just really emphasizing this language thing way too much. But all of our academic skills really are built on being able to understand and use language. When you get to school, if you're not understanding what the teacher's saying and you're not able to communicate with her and able to create formal social relationships with little friends, that's a pretty big deal. So in the toddler phase and in the early preschool phase, you really do have to treat language like it is a big...
number one priority.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
They
definitely
but it sounds like
that.
You're doing a good job. It really does. And I know, take it from Kate and me, we have older kids. It does not last forever. You have older kids, too. You know how fast it goes.
Oh, yeah, I do.
Fast. Yeah.
And that's what's so confusing sometimes, too, is because... My older ones, they all talked by, you know, before 2 years old. I mean, 23 months, they're telling stories. And,
yeah.
you know, I mean, they were just incredibly smart. And you kind of take that for granted,
right?
You
mm-hmm.
know. And then when you have one that isn't even, say, a mama at, you know, 18 months,
yeah.
it's like, wow, what did I do? You know,
mm-hmm.
where do I go from here? How did I do it with the older kids? It just seemed like they did it on their own.
Well, they did
you know?
Issues. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, typically developing kids, I think, language does develop, not spontaneously. They certainly have to be around people who talk to them appropriately. But if you're a mother and you're taking care of your child, they do just kind of absorb words. And before you know it, wow, they're talking.
Right.
You know,
so what happened in this scenario that he doesn't do that? You know, because I'm the same person that I have been. And although I was busier with, I had a 2-year-old when he was born, so I was kind of consumed with her, but I don't think that I talked any less. You know what I mean?
You probably didn't. I mean, I don't know the specifics of
yeah.
yeah. I don't know the specifics of your child, but you know, there's something unique to that child that has created an issue. It's not what you did or didn't do. I don't
uh-huh.
know what that may be because I don't know his. You know, maybe an expert would know, but I certainly don't know because I've only talked to you once and don't know your history, but it's unique to him. And this is what can you do to bring him around quicker so that when he goes to preschool or kindergarten, you know, the language gap is not nearly as large, if not, you know, he's not on the same level with his peers. He's at least a lot closer than he would have been. If you
now, are you an advocate for putting them in preschool at an early age to help them with learning language from other kids, from their peers? Is that
no.
something that you found successful in your experience?
No. You know what, okay, but I think kids learn language best from an adult, and if you have a kid who is, but I do think social relationships are important and learning to kind of follow the routine is important, and I would hate for a language-delayed kid for his first opportunity with organized, structured, teacher-led activities to be at 5 in kindergarten. That being
uh-huh.
said, I don't think the language bump is going to come from being with other kids, but there are going to be some other benefits with learning to follow the routine, You know, just the social kinds of connections that you make with other people. Kate, you might feel differently about that, but go ahead.
Well, he's a mimic. I mean, he copies his sister a lot more now than he did before. So
right.
I'm thinking he's getting to the age where he may actually benefit from being around other kids. But we hear so much from, like, the pediatrician, oh, you just need to put him in a daycare so he can have structure and be around other kids. And it's like, but you know what? That's not what I've chosen to do. I'm a stay-at-home mom for a reason and not just to put my kid on somebody else to raise.
Right.
You know, so I'm a little bit confused at that point. Should
well,
I put that, him in daycare or not, you know?
How old is your child?
He'll be 3 in December.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm thinking about putting him in there when he's 3, maybe putting him in Head Start, because they do have my speech language pathologist is there now, so she will be there working with him. But I'm not comfortable yet, because to me,
well, I mean, you're talking about Head Start, and you're talking about daycare, and if you're talking about a preschool program that qualified and experienced in working with kids with language delays, do I think he might benefit? Yes.
Mm-hmm.
But as far as sticking a child in a daycare where there are, you know, women who may meet their basic needs but not necessarily educated about what do you do about enhancing, you know, young children's language skills, do I think it'll rub off from the other kids? No.
I don't know.
Because, see,
I think
that's what our problem is here. We don't have too much preschool activity for kids under 3. They're usually
mm-hmm.
3
really
going
could.
Into pre-K.
And you really
huh?
should. 3 really is the age when I think preschool should start. Now, I think if they need to do, you know, daycare for whatever reason, mom, you know, both parents have to work or single-parent families or whatever, yada, yada, yada.
Right.
I'm not bashing working mothers because I've been a working mother forever.
Uh-huh.
But I don't think preschool before age 3 is necessary at all.
No, I don't really either. And I don't think that – go ahead.
You go ahead.
No, go ahead. I'm sorry, but it didn't.
No. I'm just saying even then I think it should be a 2 or 3 morning a week deal.
Right.
That's what
preschool.
I would like.
Preschool. Yeah, preschool. That's, to me, a traditional approach. You know, my kids went when they were 3. They were typically developing, and when they were 3, they went 2 mornings a week, and when they were 4, they went 3 mornings a week or afternoons. And that was – I stayed at home, though, so that, you know, that was good for them and good for me. And but you hear that a lot. He just needs to be around other kids.
Right.
And that really isn't going to help his language delay.
And see, that weighs down on my guilt, too. Am I being selfish by not letting him be around all these other kids in a structured environment,
when
I want to work with him?
No, he's already around other kids because you have a daughter that's just a little bit older than him. I mean, you're giving him that opportunity. I think you're right on track, and I think you're doing what best practices and what research tells us work for kids. Really, to be home with a primary caregiver and have some social opportunities within that context is the best thing that child behavior and early childhood people tell us work for kids.
So basically, I need to relax, keep doing what I'm doing, and just be patient.
You already know.
When he turns 3, if there is an opportunity for him to do some sort of a preschool where language is at least something that the teachers are knowledgeable about or, you know, aware of or give some focus to, it would be nice for him to get used to being away from you. It would be nice for your older daughter to get a little special time with mommy. You know, there are a lot of benefits to sometimes kids, I think, do anyway, he may benefit from that. But you, as far as the language stuff, you being there, somebody who loves him, knows him, has researched it, is doing everything she can do, of course that's better than a daycare.
Right.
So,
yeah.
Yeah.
You're doing the right
okay.
thing.
Well, I'm just waiting for him. Yeah, just waiting for him mainly to get to that point where he can tell me, you know, so-and-so did this or I did that. You know, I've got to have that communication going to know what happens.
Well,
when I'm not there.
Well, a lot of parents are afraid of that, but, you know, if he qualifies for a speech-based program at 3, that might be something you want to do because, again, you're giving him the opportunity to do it with adults who've been trained to deal with
right.
him in place.
Right. And all the extra I can give him would be great because, you know,
yeah.
it does drain me at some
right.
point.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, you get a little time and your daughter gets a little time and there's still plenty of time, opportunities and minutes through the day where you can be doing that for him. And he
right.
may benefit from being away from you, getting to have some little friends, getting to know another adult that he's fond of and can communicate with. And, you know, there are a lot of good things that come from a good
becoming a well-rounded
program.
Person.
Yeah, and some kids really, you know, they blossom away, surprisingly.
Right.
You might not think so, but they do. And I don't know, I can understand. But I don't know that my three-year-old, who was certainly verbal, at least at an average level, either one of them, you know, you just kind of have to really do your research on the program and know that it's a healthy, loving place that's going to meet his needs and then go from there. Because, you know, even a typically developing three-year-old probably, if there was something horrible, but as it couldn't tell you or wouldn't tell you or, you know,
right.
I think you just have to do your homework and research on the place and then trust that it'll be a good experience for him.
Right.
And if you don't have that
for
feeling,
any other behavior changes, yeah.
Right, right. You're going
right.
to know. If he's screaming when you get there or screaming, you know, you're going to know he's not happy there.
Yeah.
And if
I'm
he isn't,
wrong.
Yeah, it's not a good place if he's screaming for, you know, other than the initial separation. I'm not used to leaving mommy screaming beyond that. They let you know.
Right, right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they straighten up within a few minutes after that. Well,
uh-huh.
thank you, ladies. I know you're probably out of time. And,
yeah.
I'm sweating. Outside running around with the kids. I'm sweating, so I need to go get
well,
it.
Thanks for calling, Annette. Okay, thank
bye.
You.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Hi. Okay, our live listeners, we're over our hour. But anybody who downloads the show would still get to hear the whole our whole entire conversation. But thanks so much for being with us today and listening. And we nearly got through all of expansion. The only thing we didn't talk about were we talked about holistic phrases. We didn't really talk too much about carrier phrases, but we'll finish that up next time.
Annette got into that some. That'll be a good reminder because you were saying they don't necessarily understand the parts of the language. I got it. I did it. Where to go.
Right.
And we didn't really say, you know, yes, they're learning them as a whole phrase, and they don't necessarily use those words in a different context. So, you know, they have.
Okay.
Hmm? Yeah. Oh, it's great that they have them. Any phrase is a good phrase as far as we're concerned.
Absolutely.
So,
and I've got
mm-hmm.
some other guidelines and some other recommendations. So we'll start out with that next week.
Okay.
And the other thing we're going to talk about next week are when you are a little bit concerned about speech intelligibility for toddlers, what's appropriate to work on and what's not appropriate to work on. And again, it may be a little technical for some listeners, but we're just going to hit the high points of that anyway.
That sounds good.
Okay. Thanks so much, Kate. Have a great
Thank
day.
You. And if anybody's still listening, call in next week.
We'd love to hear from you. Bye.
Okay, bye.